Hello, and welcome to the University Guy podcast. I'm David Hawkins, an independent college counsellor based in the United Kingdom, and helping students apply to universities all over the world. Over the last couple of months, there's been a number of interesting developments in the world of international university admissions, and one particular one has stood out within my field. The National Association for College Admissions Counselling, known as NACAC, has been under investigation by the US Department of Justice for a period of just over a year. And that investigation reached a culmination, ensuring that NACAC had to take some tough decisions about some key policies. I wanted to delve a little bit deeper into this topic and provide a summary of the key issues for those college counsellors, heads of careers, heads of sixth form around the world who might not be intimately familiar with the background to this story, or perhaps are even unaware of NACAC and the rules which govern US college admissions. After some informal discussions on this topic recently in London, I decided to give a call to Steve Thomas, and we discussed what he felt was going to be the impact of these changes in the years to come. So down the line now, all the way over in beautiful Maine, which I imagine this time of year is absolutely stunning, as it is October 2019, is Steve Thomas of Rhodes College. Steve, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, David.
Great. So, Steve, do you mind just telling a little bit about your background, your career in higher ed, and a bit about the institution you work for now?
Sure. I've worked in higher education since I got out of college. So this is my, 46th year, I think. I've worked both on the high school side as a teacher and a coach and an admissions director, and on the college side as an admissions director as well. Primarily at schools in Maine until most recently. I've worked at Bates College and Colby College and College of the Atlantic, and now I work at Rhodes College directing their international admissions, though I do so from my home in Maine. Rhodes is a traditional residential liberal arts college, about 2,000 students. It's unusual in American liberal arts colleges in that it's located in an urban area in Memphis, Tennessee, which is the 20th largest city in the United States. So I'm fortunate to be able to travel internationally and recruit students and communicate with them electronically and read applications and make decisions and make financial aid decisions as well. And I go down to Memphis probably about three times a year to check in with everybody, and it's a situation I enjoy very much.
Great. It's a wonderful institution. I very much enjoyed my time there with you.
Fun when you were there.
It was a great college, great city, and I keep recommending it to my students. So what we're trying to talk about today is to give some information to counselors around the world who may have picked up some of the recent news that the rules of the game for US admissions have changed and may continue to change. And actually the analogy, you know, we're just talking about down in Memphis, I remember spending a very nice evening with you and a mutual friend, and you were trying to explain the game of baseball to me whilst we were watching a game. And those rules seem very impenetrable, but by sitting with two experts, I now understand a lot more. You know, the same rules that govern college admissions in the US may seem to the uninitiated a little bit impenetrable, but what were these rules that now seem to have changed? So we've got some background.
Sure. Well, there's an organization in the United States, actually around the world, called the National Association of College Admissions Counseling, and in order to be a member, a college would have to agree on what were formerly known as, you know, the Statement of Principles of Good Practice, and there weren't very many rules. But these were just agreements that colleges agreed to go by. There really were three that have come up most recently. One was the early decision agreement, where students would agree to apply early decision to a school, and if a school admitted them, they would agree ahead of time to enroll and to withdraw their application from other schools. There was another one that, once the student had deposited, decided to enroll at a school, other schools would not try to recruit that student. They would just, you know, lay off and let them be. And then also students that were already enrolled at colleges or universities would be off limits to other schools recruiting them. So everybody agreed cooperatively to abide by these rules. And, you know, what's happened most recently, I dare say this is all part of the Trump administration, Department of Justice, they've decided that these cooperative agreements are really some sort of collusion that prevents free trade from taking place. So they, over the last year, have basically sued the National Association of College Admissions Counseling to change, to drop these cooperative agreements. And at this meeting recently in September, it became very obvious that the Department of Justice was likely going to overrule or outlast or certainly outspend the National Association of College Admissions Counseling, and therefore the members were forced to vote to do away with these three principles of good practice.
Great, yeah, I know you and I, we were actually chatting when we were both in London at the USA College Day recently, sort of in the midst of this, and this is sort of, I think our view then, and I think of most others in this field, was NACAC, the National Association, had no choice but to because of the money.
Right, they were going to go bankrupt if they did not agree to this.
Absolutely, and within that statement of good principles, good practice, there are many other provisions which haven't gone, you know, so that students still are supposed to be the sole author of their work. There are sort of regulations and timelines and things in there. But these three are big ones. Do you mind just sort of putting a bit of flesh onto, you know, why they are so big and what actually you might think will start to happen maybe this cycle and certainly in the cycles to come?
Yeah. Well, I would say that they all come down to providing an element of predictability in the process, both for the students and the families, as well as the colleges. And without this, without these cooperative agreements, there's going to be much less predictability, because colleges will be in a position to do pretty much whatever they want, because they're not going to have agreed to not do it. So, for example, insofar as early decision goes, colleges will be in a position to incentivize early decisions, which means they could have students, they could admit students in their sophomore or junior year if they so chose. They would then, you know, agree to go there a year or two before they've even finished their high school education. It also will allow colleges to continue to recruit and offer financial aid to students after they've selected a school and deposited. So this is really going to, I think, do away with all the models, the enrollment models that colleges have about student behavior. So what I envision happening is sort of from the bottom of the pecking order up, you're going to see an erosion of these kinds of civil agreements that lend themselves to at least a modest amount of predictability for everybody.
Yeah, so for the point of the counselors on the podcast listening along and those people who actually may be completely new to some of these kind of things, you know, what we're potentially seeing is students who may potentially have got a couple of offers in the spring, agonise between a couple of colleges and pick one. And then on sort of, May 2nd, May 3rd, when that college realises that they've not hit their numbers, they're maybe 10% down to what they wanted to do, suddenly get an email chucking a couple of $1,000s or other incentives at that student to switch post what seems to be the
absolutely.
Situation.
Absolutely, and I think you're right, and I think those are going to be some of the mild things that happen. I think it's likely to get even a little bit crazier, depending on how desperate schools feel about getting their class.
Absolutely. So from your point of view, and obviously, you know, what you do now is one element of this, but you, as you mentioned, you have considerable experience running an admissions office and indeed have lots of contacts and friends doing that as well. What might colleges be doing to try and protect themselves against some of these kind of things? If you can no longer guarantee that your numbers on May the 1st are going to be, broadly speaking, your numbers when students matriculate a couple of months later, what do you think counselors might start to see?
I think there'll be a lot more activity, enrollment activity, decision changing after May 1st than there used to be, because more money is going to get thrown on the table as, you know, institutions become a little bit more desperate to get their classes, to get their numbers. If you go up to the top of the pool, you know, the schools that are more selective, you know, up at the top of the pecking order at the Ivy Leagues and the NESCACs, you know, what are they likely to do? I don't know. Maybe because they're more selective, they're going to require students to deposit in a shorter period of time. You know, maybe they have 24 hours to decide that they're going to go there and put their deposit down. Likely the deposits are going to be larger, so that people are less likely to walk away from them. So, I mean, this is just speculation on my part, but, I mean, I think that things like this are likely to happen now that the rules have changed.
Absolutely. And so I assume sort of on the ground over there, there's all sorts of chatter from admissions officers trying to sort of get the lay of the land of what people were doing. But I remember you and I were discussing it, and you used the phrase, I think, from someone in the office at Rhodes that, you know, someone will always carry a bigger gun. Someone will always try to get an advantage. That there will be people trying to game this out, and potentially maybe in three or four years' time, there'll be a completely different landscape of what this looks like.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is going to be very different. I don't think anybody knows. There is this year up until, I guess, July 1st or so, there's a hiatus. So everybody is still in agreement with the statements of good principle. A good practice, but after, you know, going into the next recruiting cycle, you know, everybody's going to have their eyes wide open to see what's going on, and then have to react to whatever sort of creative ways different schools come up with to get their class.
Absolutely.
And to incentivize them.
Yeah, and the kind of the reason I started this podcast, the reason I like to talk to people who have their finger on the pulse like you, Steve, is that there are an awful lot of counsellors around the world who don't have the time to plug into things like Chronicle of Higher Ed and follow all these developments, or maybe not even come to some of the conferences and hear these kind of things. You know, what kind of guidance might you give if you're an international school counsellor, you know, here in the UK, in Europe, somewhere around the world? Maybe you've got a chunk of your kids applied to the US, but you're not, you know, completely familiar with the ins and outs of the process. What guidance could you give to them when they start to talk to their junior class, you know, that the kids are going to be applying to college in the next cycle?
Yeah, well, I think they need to find somebody like you, for example, or somebody like me who knows what's going on and has their, you know, ear to the ground, so that they can be advised in a way that, you know, makes the most sense and allows them to make choices, given what's out there. Because I think things are going to change. You're going to, you know, I can't anticipate you're going to hear, oh, well, so-and-so university just decided that they were going to change their reply date to such-and-such, you know, and then that's going to force kids who've been admitted there and admitted somewhere else to ask the other school if they could have an extension, and it's going to get a little bit, it's going to get crazy, certainly in this first year until we know what's likely to happen. In some ways, it's I think less likely, theoretically anyway, for international students to get impacted a great deal as opposed to the domestic students here, because this is going to be all very, very, very new for them. And whether or not colleges enact these new regulations, new incentivizing to the international pool remains to be seen. Some may and some may not. So there's a lot of uncertainty, especially looking forward.
I guess what I'm hearing from you is sort of the analogy that, you know, these rules were a dam holding things back, and they've sort of, the bottom of the dam has been weakened, but it's going to take a couple of years until the whole thing's washed away.
But people
are just starting to push a little bit now and see what might be possible. But it's going to take us a couple of years fully to understand exactly, you know, what has changed and how a college is responding to it.
Right, and then colleges are going to have to see what works for them. It's going to be different for each school. But, you know, as students get picked off of a school's enrollment pool, they're going to have to react in some way to protect themselves. So there is going to be some kind of cascading effect, you know, down the pecking order with whatever happens, or up the pecking order, however.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I know you have history in this, and you have family who do college counseling as well. The one thing I keep coming to is it's never been more important for high schools to invest in college counseling, to train them, to give them the opportunity and the time to keep on top of these kind of things, because, you know, I do fear that some schools who maybe, you know, had 3 or 4 kids a year apply to the US for the last 10 years or so and suddenly find the rules of the game have changed a little bit are going to be caught slightly unawares.
I agree. There's going to be so much unknown out there that for the family that comes into this for the first time, they're just going to be overwhelmed. And I think, you know, things are going to be changing rapidly, especially in the beginning of the next recruitment cycle. Because you've got to figure colleges and universities right now, some are ramping up new plans given these new developments.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all sorts of meeting rooms and lots of caffeine being consumed as people are looking at the best way of gaming this out, which is sensible, but also we hope that, well, I'm pretty certain, but also do hope that students are put at the heart of this, that all of us on either side of this desk, whether it's admissions or counselling, we want the best things for students in this process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think it's going to be a little harder to deliver in the beginning, to give accurate advice that sticks, because you could, you could be counseling a student, and the student wants to go to school B, and they get in, and they get an award, and then all of a sudden, you know, school Y comes along and says, "Gosh, we really want to have you, and we'll double that award."
I'm deeply grateful to Steve for giving of his time, and hopefully you can all hear the insight that comes from his many years of experience in the world of US university admissions. His predictions about what we're going to see in the years to come do seem quite sensible, and I hope that those of you listening are able to take account of these and perhaps prepare some talks and presentations to your junior classes about how they might be seeing quite a different field in US university admissions that older students have had to deal with in recent years. That's it for this episode. I hope you did find it useful. Please do get in touch via david@theuniversityguide.com if I can help in any way. Please follow me on Twitter, Facebook, on Instagram, or connect via LinkedIn. And please look out for the next podcast.